This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. And Laureen on the call. So I think we can at least start our discussion because there was a little bit of a discussion on our email list earlier. So thank you, everyone, for joining. Thank you to Dave Dickinson, Paula Kochi, and Susan Rabel from Nielsen. They've also joined the call to answer any questions you might have. So I thought we could take this time today to talk about, to revisit a couple of issues we discussed last week in Marrakesh. And there's kind of three outstanding issues. Well, really two. One of them has to do with the issue of adding teenagers to the demographics for the survey, which we agreed to do, and Nielsen is planning on doing that. The two sort of open issues are the question of adding additional open-ended questions related to trust for a small segment of the demographic in each of the countries. That would be for 10 respondents in each of the countries. So what you see in front of you in the room are some suggestions of open-ended questions from two of our team members, Drew and Lorraine. The last set of questions in this document, I think we can unsync this so everyone can scroll through them themselves. The last set of questions came from David Taylor as a suggestion. He had some ideas for getting into digging a little bit deeper on the question of trust. So in a way, it's kind of related to this exercise we're considering doing. I think part of what we need to discuss today was myself and a number of other members on the team, we were under the mistaken impression that these questions that we're discussing would actually be done either face-to-face or over the phone in a format where an interviewer can ask follow-up questions. This is not the case, and that's not what Nielsen is proposing to us. What they were proposing was to add additional open-ended questions, which would take would require more coding and interpretation, which is why there's such a large cost associated with it. So I wanted to talk to all of you about those things, and maybe we can start off with the open-ended questions that you see in front of you from Drew and Lorraine, and whether the group still feels this is a valuable exercise and worth the additional cost. And then we can talk about the additional questions that David suggested. Dave, maybe you can talk for a minute or two about how these questions would be posed, how we would determine who the questions would be asked to, and so on and so forth. And actually, before you do that, Lorraine, I saw you just raise your hand, so I'm guessing you have something to add there. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking, and I think it would be useful to hear from Dave, but I was thinking that as a threshold matter, just based on feedback from different folks, since we seem to have misunderstood the nature of what these open-ended questions would be, that after Dave speaks, it might be more useful to perhaps deal with the threshold question of, given that this is a little different than we thought, maybe we should decide if it's worth pursuing via the Nielsen framework or via a different framework that would allow for a face-to-face discussion and back and forth. It just seems to me it's more useful to deal with that threshold question and then go to the nitty-gritty of what the open-ended questions might be.
Right. I think that makes sense as well. Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree 100% with what Lorraine just said, and as I indicated on the list, I feel like with my new understanding of the Nielsen proposal, I understand why it's expensive. They obviously just have to do a lot of translation and coding and so on. But it feels like not quite the right format for what we want out of the exercise, with a little bit more interactivity and the ability to get like more nuanced responses. Well, it's hard to control what sort of responses we're going to get in an environment where people are just typing into boxes. So I would say we just send out the survey mostly as is. We can deal with David's questions and then think about how we want to deal with some of these more nuanced questions through some sort of more interactive interviews.
Yeah, this is Dave Dickinson. As I looked through this list, there were some that I thought could potentially add some additional value, but overall I thought that a lot of these were probably not going to, either were very similar to questions we were already asking in the survey, or were probably not structured in a way that we were going to get that much of value. The issue with doing it face-to-face is just the cost. It's the most expensive way to go about collecting the data. And so we are putting, and in this case, I don't think there's any real need for face-to-face. We are putting together a ballpark budget for you of what it would cost to do them over the phone with an interviewer who could do a little bit more probing and clarifying of their responses. That will still be quite a bit more expensive. And at the end of the day, it just occurred to me, Lisa, different from our conversation yesterday, if that's the route we go, there's no real urgency for that, because we would go out and do that as basically a separate endeavor anyway, whereas when we were talking about the original doing it online, we were going to use rules in the survey to trigger whether they were asked to take these extra questions. So, you know, it had to be linked. But if it's not linked, then you can do that at any time. And I would, frankly, I would wait till after the results come in and you see the results of the open-ended questions that we have in there, because very likely that will trigger some additional thoughts that you would want to ask about. And then you can decide whether those are things you really need to, either for empirical reasons or for political reasons, to use that phrase, you have to do in every country, or could you do it in a subset of countries? That's a typical practice in marketing research, is you pick a subset of all the countries in order to get your qualitative, just because it's more cost effective that way. So those were my thoughts on this once I saw the questions that were here, and once we started talking about doing it as a phone effort. But we will provide the team with a ballpark budget of what that's going to cost to do. And you're right, Jordan, it's a lot of it is translation, and then as you move to telephone, obviously you need to find somebody who is a good enough interviewer that they can add probes and clarifications. Otherwise, you might as well just have them type it in.
Thank you, Dave. Lauren, your hand is still up. Not sure if that's a new comment or was that something.
Sorry, I just forgot to put it down. I will do that now.
No, it must be getting tired.
Thank you, Dave. So I see two comments in the chat from Jonathan and Jordan, both kind of agreeing with David's approach to field the survey basically as it is now, and then if we decide to do additional follow-up research and interviews or phone interviews, revisit that question after we see what the survey data is. Fabro, Laureen, do you have any opposition to that or any thoughts on that approach?
This is Laureen. I think actually that approach makes sense, and I even think it has the added benefit of more time going by. People may be a smidgen more familiar and knowledgeable about these DTLDs, even in a matter of months, and that would benefit us, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Thank you. And Fabro also agrees. So, great. Then I think that's the approach we'll take. And we'll move forward with the survey largely as it is now, with the exception of these suggested questions from David Taylor, who I wish could have joined us on the call today. But I shared these with Dave Dickinson last week after our meeting in Marrakesh, and he seemed to see some value in these questions. Dave, I don't know if you wanted to address that now.
Sure. So if you can, let's see. I scroll this out. Yeah, so are they down here at the bottom? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
Under the David Taylor section, there's question one, which I looked at that and I thought that was an area where we could potentially get a layering on, a little more granular or another look at some of the questions we're asking. So I thought that was a reasonable question to add, and we can add it between questions 805 and 812. which I'll jump over there and tell you what those are real quickly here. 805 is a question that is, have you recently visited websites with any of the following new domain extensions? Please select all you recall having visited. And then 812 is, assume you're looking for information about, it's the first of that series where we give them variants on a topic. So in this case, it's looking for wild animal photography. And then we go through and we do if, what if you're shopping, what if you're looking to travel, that sort of thing. So before we get into more granular things, and right after we've talked to about their familiarity with the new extensions, then we'll just get their sort of general perceptions of what they expect for some of these newer types of extensions. I keep using that name, but question, the next two questions, 2 and 3, seemed, frankly, they seemed overlapping to me. And bear with me just a second. I'm jumping back and forth between windows. Sometimes even two monitors is not enough. 765. Scroll down. Okay, we have a question. So the first one here, which is, do you expect any domain registrations under a certain domain name extension to have been subjected to eligibility requirements? What we've got currently is a question that reads, as you may know, people can purchase or register rights to a domain, to a name using a GTLD for a purpose like creating a website. This typically includes ensuring that the domain name is not already in use, providing information about the person or company registering it, and then paying a fee. What are your expectations on purchasing or registering domain using each of the following GTLDs? And this is where we ask there should be, their options are there shouldn't be any restrictions, there should be some restrictions, or there should be strict restrictions. So there's different things, but I think they're getting at the same thing. You know, what are their expectations about eligibility requirements, and we could change the language a little bit to make eligibility a little stronger, but I think that's there with providing information, that sort of thing. And then the second one, or question three there, should, you know, proof that it's required. There is another question, which is 867. We'd like to ask you another question about restrictions on registration of a GTLD. Do you feel the following restrictions should be enforced? And one of the options in this is requirements for validated credentials, and then validation that the person or company registering the site meets intended parameters. There's more to each of these options. There's an example. But, you know, there's four options there about different types of qualifications for different types of domain registrations. So it seemed to me like this was pretty well covered, possibly with a wording tweak for question 765 to talk about, to just bring in eligibility. But and I see Jordan saying you agree with the first one. It seems to look, add one and you agree the other one seemed duplicative. Any other comments or thoughts?
Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, so actually on number one, I just want to reiterate the concern that I expressed at the in-person meeting, and maybe David has thoughts on how to approach this. But I think the way the question's phrased, I think like everyone's going to say, yeah, duh. why wouldn't I expect that, right? And there's, you know, I guess, there's some extensions that I think aren't quite as obvious in their meaning, or, you know, wouldn't be as obvious what they would be limited to. And B, you know, I give the example of, like, you know, if you saw a domain like vacuum.doctor, you might say, if you just saw .doctor, you might say, yeah, I assume that there's going to be all doctors in there. But then if you saw vacuum.doctor, would you be confused and think that that's actually a medical doctor? Probably not. And so I'm just trying to figure out how we can tease out that distinction of thinking only about the TLDs versus actually looking at like an SLD in context to better understand the user expectations there.
Yeah, maybe that doctor does liposuction, I guess. But, yeah, it's tough because, you know, you raise a good point. I mean, there's always permutations and corner cases that you know, how many questions or how granular can you get? But, putting your specific example aside, because I think context makes a difference as well. If if it's a medical doctor is what you're expecting and it's a appliance repair person, that's quite different. But I think generally we could ask something along the lines of this question, but have it be, instead of a yes or no, work up a scale or a set of options that would be, it should be very strictly related, or very tightly related, just banks or financial institutions, for example, just banks or financial institutions in Doc Bank, or it can be generally related. They could be providing other services but not be a bank or financial institution. It only needs to be, that's really up to the, I'll have to think of the next couple options, but a couple of looser options. Like, it's really up to the internet user to validate whether it's, how closely it's related, or something like that. I could, off the top of my head, I'm not coming up with the right language for the less restrictive options, but we can work on that. That might get you a little bit closer, but when we talked about this last year with these questions, I think the answer is always going to be dependent on the context. So what we can achieve in this survey is sort of getting a general orientation, and then what we tried to do this year is demonstrate our hypothesis or have data to prove or disprove our hypothesis is that there may be a general orientation towards freedom and lack of restriction, but that as you get more specific into use cases, people get more, raise their expectations around that. Or start to see the value of that. We didn't have data to show that second part of that last time, and we will this time.
Yeah. I think maybe the nuance I'm getting at is exactly the sort of stuff we should be getting at in the sort of interactive interviews. In any case.
Yeah, it'll be much easier there because you can freeform.
I think just the extent we can change, like, as you word this question, I think just thinking about it in a way that's not going to feel a little bit like a push-pull with a, like, sort of an obvious answer.
Yeah.
I think that's my only concern here.
All right, great. Good POV. Okay, so then I think, unless I hear from anyone else, we'll work up an addition for question one as we've discussed, and avoiding the dull response as much as possible, and then we'll tweak the question and wording on 765 to meet the goal of what we see here is Q2 and Q3. I think is pretty much well covered already.
That sounds good. Thank you, Dave. Any other questions or comments from the group? I can share the reworked question with the group, and I think once we settle on that, we should be ready to field the survey.
Yay.
Okay, great. Well, that was quick and easy. Thank you, everyone. Unless there's any other questions or comments, I think we can end this call.
All right, super, folks. I'll send out, at least I'll tweak the latest version with these changes, and I'll have it to you by the end of the day tomorrow at the latest.
Great. Thank you very much. And Nielsen team, I'll share our decision on the open-ended questions front with the full review team. I'll send a note out to the full review team later today.
Super. All right.
See Lorraine typing. Let me give her a minute. Okay, great. Thank you, Lorraine, and Jordan, and Jonathan as well, and thanks to the Nielsen folks for joining, too.
Sure. Take care, everyone. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you.